Hi, this is Dave Rowntree, author of Paranormal Technology, Understanding the Science of Ghost Hunting, lecturer, author, and paranormal researcher. And when you're not busy in the field, do what I do and listen to The Mallard Report with Jim Mallard.
The opinions expressed in The Mallard Report are those of the hosts and participants and are not intended to and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of any simulcasting radio network or sponsor. All listeners are advised to make their own decisions.
It's the Mallard Report. Yeah, the Mallard Report. The paranormal talk radio show with Jim Mallard as your host. See what lies beneath any paranormal activity.
I've got to push my microphone to talk, though, but that's okay. Now we're all good to go. Somebody buttons so little time. My guest tonight is Lloyd Auerbach. He's joining me on the line. I think we're just going to skip the idle chatter because I have this full page of notes that I want to talk to him about. So how are you doing tonight, Lloyd?
I'm doing fine, thanks, Jim.
Yeah, I'm glad you found time because we were just talking a little bit, and you seem like you're going to be swamped over the next few months, so I'm glad I got you in. So.
Yeah.
So the first thing I want to talk about, the one thing that doesn't belong with the others, kind of, is chocolate. I'm fascinated by this, of course, because I'm sitting here being a bigger guy myself. So what made you want to get into chocolate?
Well, it wasn't something made me want to. It just happened. I guess you could say food is my religion. It's my wife and I. We call ourselves foodists. And we've always been interested in different kinds of foods. Wine is a big thing here in Northern California, of course. And in the late 90s, there was a beginning of a chocolate revolution where artisan chocolate makers were starting to get their stuff out there. In other words, good chocolate. And I discovered really good chocolate. And that led me to really getting curious about how it was made and what the variations were, similar to my interest in wine. As more and more artisans and really good chocolate makers in the U.S. started popping up, and I found a spot in San Francisco to really try my tastes across many boards, I started reading up on it, and one of my publishers actually suggested I start working on a book, which has taken me on and off for the last few years. In that process, I started doing guided chocolate tastings, kind of like a wine tasting, as an outgrowth of my desire to lecture and perform. And interviewing some of the chocolate makers led me to taking a course on being a professional chocolatier, and I started making my own. So it's kind of been a little evolutionary couple of steps here and there for me. Along the way, I found that there was research that Dean Radin had done, coincidentally, on putting intentionality into chocolate and seeing how that affected people, kind of a PK kind of experiment with chocolate. And I'm hoping at some point I'd love to actually expand that research myself.
Makes sense to me. I mean, chocolate normally makes people happy, so it'd be interesting to see all the different aspects and different things you could do with it. So,
right. And I make my chocolate. Got a website specifically for the chocolate stuff, which is hauntedbychocolate.com, which will be the name of the book too. Although, and I do sell chocolate through it. Although during the summertime, it's kind of tough for me to ship chocolate just because it gets so warm across the country, and you know, I don't think people want puddles arriving in their mail.
Well, that's true. I was just thinking about that. Might be an issue.
Yeah, but it is. I mean, you can ship overnight with some cold packs, but that gets really expensive.
Yeah. So let's talk. The first thing I want to talk to you about is mentoring. You mentioned to me mentoring programs for ghost hunters and mediums. So I'll divide that question up. Let's talk about ghost hunters first. So what type of things are you trying to teach them? Because I think it's important for ghost hunters to have an education.
Well, you know, I think it's very important for ghost hunters to have an education. It's very important they actually read books that come from reliable sources that are based in the 130-plus years in parapsychology. I mean, there's so many books out there by... I just saw another one about procedures and methods for ghost hunters, and the guy is for... I haven't seen the book, so I can't speak to whether he's actually basing this in past research or not, or working or not, but so many of those books that are out there really are based on their own procedures and methods, which they've picked up from television. And television stuff is not based on reality. It's based on what works best for the producers, for the production companies. It's kind of an adaptation, and I guess you could say it's a skewed version of the way researchers and investigators have been involved in looking at ghosts and hauntings and poltergeists in the field for over 100 years. And we have a mass of literature, and we have methods, and even the very technology starts that people began with on TV. That stuff comes from work in parapsychology by folks like myself, but what they're attributing to these pieces of equipment is just so far beyond what is actually real is kind of ridiculous. And so I've been teaching distance and local classes in everything from investigations to research methods for psychic experience, but also talking about doing PK and mind over matter and actually learning to be a little bit more psychic and working with psychics and all that. And I realized after beating my head against the wall for many, many years that so many of these folks do not want to take a course. They think they already know it all, which is fine. You know, they can do that. But there's a few that want to take classes, and there's a larger group that would like to talk to someone when they have questions or issues come up. And it was that second group that I really started trying to target, knowing that they wouldn't take courses, but at least maybe they would actually ask for some help on some of their cases or some guidance in what to learn on their own, because much of what I teach can be learned on your own if you know the right sources, and I'm always happy to share those sources. When I started proposing this last September, I got a few people here and there, and I've had a couple of people who are investigators who have worked with me. Every so often, and that's kind of what I intended for this. And then it turned out that I started hearing more from psychics and mediums than I did from ghost hunters. Again, the ghost hunters seem to think that they don't need to know anything, which is sad in and of itself, because even I need to know stuff. I mean, I talk to my colleagues about things. And psychics and mediums became more interested, and for me, a lot more interesting in some respects, because they're actually trying to figure out what's going on in their own experience, how to hone their own abilities, and how to apply them in ways that make them useful to researchers, to ghost hunters, to investigators, and then also how they can better understand what's actually happening with their experiences. So they're interested in the science, which is, it's so weird that the psychics and the mediums are the ones who are interested in science, and the ghost hunters think they already know it all.
I'm dumbfounded, but I know, I agree with it 100%. It's just, it's the greatest oxymoron of all time, but it's not exactly government intelligence, so to speak. But
Yeah, it's sad that people think that education by television is a good way to go. And it's a good, fun thing to do as a hobby, but because there are other people involved, both living and dead, you know, the clients, potentially the ghosts, it's seriously messed up.
Yes, I totally agree with that. So if somebody's listening to this and wants to get involved with one of these or your program here, how do they start the process?
Well, the easiest thing to do is just to contact me directly, and they can do that from my website, mindreader.com, or just directly email me, which is profparanormal, like Professor Paranormal, profparanormal@gmail.com. The email's also on my website. There's a little bit of information on the mentoring there as well. You know, I've called it a program, but it's not really any sort of directed program. Unless somebody wants that, I can certainly set that up. It's been really more making myself available as a resource and also guiding people to where they can learn more stuff and where they can, and actually helping them once they've actually learned it to kind of integrate it into their process of investigations.
What? I'm confused. You're not charging thousands of dollars for this?
I'm charging some money for it. I'm charging an hourly on this, but I'm not charging thousands. You know, maybe I should charge thousands of dollars. Maybe that will actually get people to start signing up with me. I thought about trying to keep it reasonable because I feel passionate about educating people, but I keep getting advice from folks who do courses and online things and webcasts, and I'm crazy to do that. I should be charging, you know, adding another zero to what I'm charging, and then I'd actually have people showing up interested in this.
That's so true, but so you know, I'm glad being the guy that is more likely to pay something without the extra zero, but
yeah.
So this all ties back to the distance learning programs too, as well. I'm assuming, right?
Mm-hmm. So what's it does, and I've had a few of the folks who have been mentored who actually ended up taking the distance courses because they felt that was a really good. They realized suddenly how little they did know in some areas, and that there's an easier way for them to work through some of the material than just simply having to come up questions and bring up issues for us to discuss. So my courses are through a place called HCH Institute in Northern California. We're here in the Bay Area. And I teach them locally. There are a series of courses, kind of a deep intro to parapsychology. So I cover various areas. The investigation class is just one of them. I have one that covers evidence for life after death, which connects directly to, of course, ghost hunting. I have another one on being psychic, which is both the research on ESP that we have and how that, and actually how that connects to people's real experiences, which does connect to ghosts. But also then covers a little bit about being more psychic yourself, and also how to work with psychics. So it kind of covers all three bases. And then I have one specifically aimed at psychokinesis, mind over matter. And that one's coupled actually with precognition, foretelling the future, because there's kind of a philosophical connection between those two. I just finished a two-week, a two-session theories and models of psychic experience class, which covers a little bit of physics and other fun stuff, both speculative and what we think things actually are. And then I'm doing one next month, which is a two-night class, which is, we call it the crossover science, and it really is parapsychology's connection mainly to anthropology. So looking at supernatural and occult and witchcraft belief systems and how they tie back to things like ghosts and ESP and psychokinesis and such based on both the parapsychological work and the anthropology work. The distance courses are actually, people can call into the classes if they want, and listen to them or participate live on a phone bridge we have. While I'm teaching class, I have a few people in my classroom here in California. And or they can just take the recordings of the classes, which we do, plus a lot of other materials, and then spend time on the phone and be one-on-one. Because I actually, with my distance students, I like to actually talk to them on the phone directly, not just do an email thing.
Very cool. Very convenient, too. That way you can get, I'm sure you've had students from around the world, so.
Had a few, and actually it's kind of fun. The classes are recorded in MP3, so people tell me that they just listen to the lectures on their drive to work, which is kind of what I intended. You don't have to be locked in front of a computer like a lot of the other courses, and this way, you know, it really is ultra convenient. People just run on their phones or their iPods and listen wherever they're going, and then for the distance students, like I said, we just get on the phone, and any questions that come up, any topics we need to further discuss, we go through that. And all the classes come with tons of extra text materials and some video, too. So they're pretty good bargains from what people tell me.
Sounds like it. I mean, they have the one-on-one contact and have the recordings so you can go back over it. That's even better.
Exactly.
In my book.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as I know, most of my listeners listen to podcasts throughout the week, so it's a great thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of that same idea, is that people can do that. In fact, I just uploaded on Payloads, which is an online store, and I haven't put the links up on my website. Well, actually, I put a couple of the links up on my website already under the merchandise page, but I've done some phone lectures, so like teleseminars, which I put up there for very inexpensive, you know, like $10. And then I just put up a version of our ghost hunting class and a version of the Intro to Parapsychology class, which are kind of like a half-price version without any of the ability to call in. It's just the passive learning. So you listen and you read stuff, and if you want, and people can actually upgrade to the full class if they want to spend time on the phone with me and apply the class to our certificate program as well. But I'm trying to make them available in different formats or different levels so that people can actually get the information, whether they want to actually apply it to anything. When you take all the classes together, you end up with a certificate in parapsychological studies from our school.
That's cool. But, okay, so here I'm going to skip down a little bit. I'm jumping off course a little bit, but we'll get back to the things you want to talk about here in a second.
Mm-hmm.
But give me a crash course. I mean, obviously, we've only got so much time tonight. But give me a general outline. What is parapsychology? Because I hear it thrown around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So let's lay it out for people so they can get their mouth wet on it, so maybe they will be more interested in it.
Sure. And parapsychology is the study of psychic phenomena and experiences. And by that I mean communication or interactions between people and the environment, between people, each other, that we call that ESP. If you're getting it, if it's informational, if it's activity or action, it's psychokinesis or mind over matter. And those are the two main areas of laboratory research, although the third area has started falling into the laboratory research area as well, which is evidence for survival of bodily death, that consciousness or mind can survive the death of the body. And that's where the ghost and mediumship stuff falls in right now. In actuality, and ESP is involved in apparition or ghost sightings, ghost experiences. It is absolutely involved in those. It is absolutely involved in haunting experiences at this point. It's somewhat involved in poltergeist phenomena. Psychokinesis is involved definitely in poltergeist phenomena, and it's also involved in ghost cases where things are physically moved or EVP happens. And so parapsychology has two elements. It's laboratory research focused for the most part, because that's where you learn in the method, the best scientific method, as much as you can. Unfortunately, that excludes certain things like ghosts, unless we can get the ghosts to actually volunteer to come into the laboratory. We're kind of stuck with that one. And then we have field investigation or field research, which is going out in the natural world and seeing how people are psychic and looking at apparitions and hauntings and poltergeist cases and trying to find common patterns and sometimes bringing those patterns into the laboratory to test those things. So we're looking at the psychic world, which for some reason some ghost hunting shows seem to poo-poo and say has nothing to do with ghosts and hauntings, but it is all psychic. It all is all in that arena for us and in general. And these are all phenomena of the mind, of consciousness. So unlike psychology, and the reason we're on the side of psychology is we're not studying behavior, which is what psychology does. We're actually studying phenomena of the mind itself, living and dead.
I've got my interest, so that's cool. So what percent, when, like, if I go to do a client interview, what are the percentages that if they're telling me they're seeing or hearing something, what are the actual odds they may be actually hearing or seeing something?
You know, it's really tough to put any sort of number to that. There's been no real study demographically for whether the things are real, because you have to actually investigate the experiences at that point or look at whether they, A, fall into the range of experiences that people report and have reported for so long and the things that have been investigated. And then, B, you have to actually take the individual's experience and what's going on there to determine whether something's happening. When people call and I do the initial phone interview with folks, there are two things that can happen. First, yes, some of them are right off the beginning, I can tell that they are misinterpreting things going on in the environment. They may be psychologically disturbed, but it's usually misinterpretation. There's an explanation for what they're reporting. However, we often have people reporting things that do sound like they could actually be apparitions or hauntings or poltergeist phenomena. And then I have them start going through the various individual experiences that they and other people in the home have had. And some of them still continue to be in those categories, but some of them can be explained. Even in the best of the ghost cases, we have some reports or some experiences or some activity that is reported that does actually have a real explanation, a non-paranormal one. It's just people have gotten so freaked out about seeing the ghost that they're just misinterpreting a lot of other stuff as it happens. Then going on the case, again, we find a percentage of what we are told turns out to have better or other explanations, even in the best of cases. So it's kind of tough to give any sort of numbers to this.
Yeah, it's always a case-by-case basis. I was just trying to see if maybe somebody knew something more than I did about it, which we should probably keep track of that. But
yeah, I mean, there are certainly polls of people's beliefs, but there have never really been any sort of, not since there have been a couple of what are called census of hallucinations. There was one back in the 19th century. It was really a census of people's experiences, and it was covering thousands of people in Great Britain. And the Society for Psychical Research did that study. And then John Palmer did one in Charlottesville, Virginia, back in the 60s, I think it was late 60s, early 70s, with a few thousand people as well. But there really hasn't been anything like that done in many, many years. There's no funding for something like that right now.
Yeah. Oh, I probably should tell people who you are, since I haven't done that for 20 minutes. The show's only an hour.
My guest tonight. Why should they listen to Lloyd?
Who is that guy? That voice kind of sounds familiar, but I don't know who it is. It's Lloyd Auerbach, everybody. And it's the Mallard Report, of course. I'm Jim Mallard, your host. I never say that. I don't know why I'm going there even tonight. But so let's switch gears kind of again. Seems to be what I'm doing tonight. The Forever Family Foundation. I see you're elected president. Is that what your new title is there?
Yeah, I'm president of the foundation. The foundation's, it's really a great organization to support and to join. Good news is joining is free, although we'd like to see donations to the organization. And it's foreverfamilyfoundation.org, so it's a real easy one to find on the web. And the Forever Family Foundation supports scientific research on the afterlife, on life after death, including apparitional research. It supports mediumship research from a scientific perspective on the one hand. And on the other hand, the reason it was even formed was to support the work of spirit mediums, especially in the family grieving process. It was started by folks who had lost their daughter and a few other folks who had lost family members, and they had found some serious relief from grief by working with a couple of mediums. And so they have their own certification program for mediums, which is a kind of background check and a test of sorts. It's not completely rigorous as the Winbridge Institute has done, which is an organization supported by the Forever Family Foundation. They do scientific research with mediums, and they had a research mediumship program. So they have 20 research mediums who went through a year's program of extensively controlled and research. Their Forever Family certified mediums are great people. They're really good. They typically have taken some grief counseling classes as well, so they're good not just as mediums, they actually work in other levels as well. And the foundation puts on an annual conference on the afterlife. We have one coming up in November in San Diego this year. It kind of bounces around, and you can find information on the website about that. But we have speakers talking about everything from near-death experiences, and that'll be Eben Alexander, who is the neurosurgeon who had an incredible near-death experience that was written up in Proof of Heaven. Stephen Browdy, who is one of the long-term parapsychological researchers, and he's going to be talking about the old physical mediumship stuff, but he's been working with a group in Germany that can do physical mediumship, very, very cool stuff under control conditions. And then there'll be a few other researchers and a couple mediums actually speaking, which is typical for our conferences. But you can join the organization for free, get a newsletter, be told about other events that they have all over the country, and find out about who their certified mediums are and all that stuff. So it's definitely worthy organization. And they're actually supporting some research, which is turning out really interesting. It's not just their research that they're supporting. It's also finding other research that's going on, looking at psychology, the psychology of grief, and that mediums actually can be of help, assuming we're not talking about the few mediums who are scam artists, because there are those people out there, too.
Sad but true, yes. There's always, of course, in any line of work.
Every field, that's right.
And that was foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
That's correct, foreverfamilyfoundation.org. I'll be speaking, I'll be kind of the wrap-up presentation for this conference, and there's going to be a fundraiser, and it's going to be a great conference. I mean, the last couple of years have been really wonderful conferences. With the mediums doing things. So it's kind of like bouncing back and forth between the science and the actual practice. And that's one of the best things about these conferences, I think. And it's just a really great organization to be involved with.
You made a good pitch, so sounds like it. Of course, now that you're the president, you probably have to make a good pitch, right?
Well, I was making a good pitch even before I was president. I've also been on the scientific advisory board for a number of years, and their attitude towards this and the fact that they are not just, you know, a spiritualist organization. They're really trying to support the research as much as possible as well. That's really important, and I think it's just something that's key because this is an area where really research is necessary, is needed.
Yes, and I've noticed that about everything that we've talked about to this point. It's always rounded. There's the spiritual side, and then there's the science side of everything, so...
Mm-hmm.
That's. I'm glad to hear that, and I think more people need to what's the word I'm looking for? Achieve that way, not achieve that way, head that way, to achieve that balance.
And sadly, so many of there's this huge paranormal community out there, and so many people, including some of these guys on TV, claim they're doing scientific work or scientific investigations. They don't even know. It's very clear by the behavior we see on television that they don't know what science actually is, and they don't know what the scientific method is. And you know, there has to be a demarcation between when you're doing science and when you're not doing science. I mean, when I do investigations, not all my investigations are scientific. They come from the base of science and gathered material of parapsychology, which is a science. But the actual carrying out of an investigation very often is not scientific. It can't be in some instances.
Yeah, that's what I've always been confused by, because you go to, say, somebody's house for the sake of our real conversation here, and you're there for one night. How can you control anything or know, you know, you don't know anything that goes on in the house on a daily basis.
Right. Right. So, yeah, I mean, you can come up with a hypothesis. You can do an observation. You can test the hypothesis. You can see if that fits. There's only so far you can go. The equipment, the biggest problem, I think, is actually not just the ghost hunting shows, but generally science education is a problem in the United States. And there's this attitude, not just in the ghost hunting world, that using technology or tools, electronic tools, means you're doing science. And that is not the case.
Well, I've got news for you, then. We're doing science tonight.
That's cool. Well, when I use my microwave, I'm doing science. I actually know how a microwave oven works. A lot of people don't even know how their equipment works, you know, or what it does.
Boy, that's just brought a big grin to my face. We're doing science tonight. Yay!
Right, yeah. I mean, and the other thing that's really funny is that I've had people tell me, you know, you sometimes use a tape measure to measure the distance between two objects if one of them had moved, right?
Right.
Okay. I'm told that that's not science. That's a piece of technology. Actually, a tape measure is technology. A stone knife is technology.
I was going to say, so if it's not science, I guess I guess you could confuse it with math.
Yeah. Well, I'm told that's not science because I'm not using a laser measurement device. In other words, because it's not electronic, it's not science. That's what I've been told. It goes back to, when I hear that, I just have to, there are points where I just look at people when they said things to me like that, and I just kind of have to shake my head and walk away.
So I'm going to make this ultimate jackwagon statement then, and we'll just move on to something else after I'm done. If you're not using an electronic device, global warming doesn't exist. Okay.
Right, that's right.
Because we haven't had digital thermometers for, 30 years or something like that. Anyways, so.
That's correct. That's right. Actually, you know, unfortunately, that means that anybody using an old thermometer, mercury or alcohol, it doesn't know what they're doing. They're
right.
Not doing anything.
Yeah. Okay, now that we've cleared that up, and I'll be getting a nasty email about that here in a few minutes from somebody, one of my loyal listeners who, you know, beats that drum like you want to believe, but okay. I'm not saying it's true. I believe that you can do things the old-fashioned way.
Yes.
I believe the analog system still is pertaining, especially if a tape measure. Good grief.
And
so, one more serious... Well, I guess these other topics are serious, too, but... Okay. The Ryan Research Institute. I'm fascinated. Of course, I always scratch the surface every time I visit or read anything about this, but you're more in the know than I am. So what's going on down there?
Well, I'm on the board of directors of the Ryan Research Center, and the Ryan Center has been really kind of ramping up over the last couple of years in a lot of ways. The Ryan Education Center, which is part of the Ryan Center, has been starting to offer online courses. Actually, it taught a ghost hunting class, an investigations class, in a more traditional webcast format through them, and also have been there several times to lecture. But it's a great organization. It supports education. It's a great place to start your education in the field. Again, not just in the laboratory work, but otherwise they really kind of spread themselves looking at people's experiences, not just what's going on in the lab. But they've been doing some work. They've had a couple funded research projects, outside funding, one of which has been looking at biophotons. In other words, human bodies give off photonic emissions. We have very, very minor, a photon is a particle of light, a piece of light, and we do give off photons. Not a lot, certainly not enough to see, but they're testing the hypothesis that a healer, because tradition says healers often have a glow around them, so they decided to test the idea that healers might actually be giving off intensive biophotons. And so the research is utilizing a blacked-out room and a photomultiplier tube that can detect as little as one photon. They're looking in a particular range of light for that. And they're working with healers, and they basically tell them when to start and when to, you know, to do their energy thing. And they've been coming up with some really interesting results that healers, when they are in the healing mode, are actually putting out significant difference, like a huge increase in biophotons. And that's certainly nothing to be visible, but huge increase in biophotons. And that's a really interesting thing. And it's not necessarily a psychic thing, except when it actually heals somebody. You know, the human body does give off infrared radiation, which can be seen. If you've ever seen those thermal vision cameras, one of the reasons why when they're pointed at people, they have different colors on their faces and hot spots is because we have differing temperatures. And you can change that. People, especially who've done biofeedback, can actually increase their blood flow and increase their surface temperature of their skin. But they're going in the ultraviolet range and looking more in the biophoton research that has nothing to do with blood flow and things like that. So it's really interesting research that they're trying there. They're also doing still at the beginnings of research that's sort of based on the old idea of weighing the soul at a person's death. I'm sure you've heard of that.
Yes.
Yeah, back in the early 20th century, some researcher actually, you know, weighed people when they were dying and when they died and found that there was a difference, that the body weighed, I think, 21 grams less. And there are some questions about how that was done. So that was actually replicated a few years ago using animals, because the ethics of that are kind of fishy. And it was not replicated by people in parapsychology, but it was replicated. And they found that some animals actually lost weight, and some animals gained weight, which was kind of weird, when they died. So the research now is looking at whether people who claim to be going out of their body, when they're claimed to be out of their body, whether their bodies change weight. And they're using very special, they're still working with kind of making the system work properly so that they don't have to worry about shifting weight when the person's laying down, training the volunteers from the Monroe Institute who do out-of-body work. And then they're also adding on a piece that when they go out of their body, they want them to pop into an area of the lab and see if they can describe a target that they're seeing as well, to see if that part of it also is happening. And I think they're trying to attach some other aspects of understanding what's going on when people claim to be out of body. So those are two big research projects they're doing. But one of the things the Ryan Center does is have biweekly lectures. And if you are a member of the Ryan Center, and I highly encourage people to join, this is not a free membership like the Forever Family Foundation, but you will definitely get your money's worth. You can join the organization, and once you're in, you can go to the media library and get a backlog of all these lectures on video, because they've been videotaping lectures for quite some time. If you're not a member, you can still see a few of them. They offer a few for free, so if you want to see what you might get. They also have MP3 recordings and a lot of other material. It's just really the biggest bargain you can possibly think of to be part of this organization. And it really helps support the work in parapsychology. And the Ryan Center has just recently finished a fundraising effort. We're going to be doing more of those coming up with a challenge grant, kind of a matching grant. But we're always looking for support. And they give out, you know, they help support research in other areas and other labs as well.
It just sounds like another phenomenal thing that you're connected with. So, how do you sleep? That's the next question.
Yeah. How do I sleep?
Yeah.
I've cloned myself. like Michael Keaton movie Multiplicity.
It almost seems like you had to at this point, but that's okay.
I juggle a little bit. You know, my duties for the Forever Family Foundation are minimal. They're more kind of like situational. The Ryan Center, I do things. We have our occasional board meetings, and I teach. You know, probably most of what keeps me busy in the evenings has been teaching more than anything else. At the moment, I have a lot of free time, although I may be jumping into a 12-week project that has nothing to do with parapsychology for a little while. So I wish I was busier with certain things that I'm doing, just to keep me going financially. It's always been a very, very busy. It's a challenge for those of us in the field of parapsychology because it's not like there are jobs. You know, not like these things pay. Most of these things, the teaching pays a little bit, and certainly the Ryan Center and the Forever Family, those are things that I'm doing volunteer work for, as are most of us. And supporting people's work in parapsychology has always been difficult. Unfortunately, I don't get the lectures that the guys on TV do. So it's not like I'm out there lecturing for money as well either, so unfortunately. It's a tough thing for those of us who have been really trying to, really struggling in the field for a really long time. And you know, the whole sleeping thing is kind of interesting because the Ryan Center, for example, has been struggling for such a long time. This fundraising effort we just did really recently has helped quite a bit. But I have people contacting me from ghost hunting groups all the time asking me for contributions of books or something else for auctions that they're doing to support this historic haunted site or that haunted site to keep them open so the ghost hunters can keep going in and doing investigations. And frankly, I'm kind of done with that now. I have sent photographs off to just gratis to support it. But we're trying to get the ghost hunting, the paranormal community to really support actual research, which can then turn around and support them. We'd love to have an organization like the Ryan Center supported to the level where they can be a true resource center for every ghost hunting team out there in the country. But they're spending their money and their time supporting haunted sites, which let them come in and investigate over and over again, which doesn't really help an understanding of the field. It just kind of helps them do fun stuff.
Yeah, and doesn't really accomplish anything.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. I mean, from the perspective of the haunted locations, from the historic sites, clearly some historic sites have stayed open because of the efforts of ghost hunters. And keeping historic sites open, I think, is a really good thing to do. I'm never going to say it's a bad thing to do. But if the reason, you know, if you've got energy and you're saying, I'm helping to support the field, that's not what you're doing. You're supporting your personal backyard, which is fine, but don't be saying you're supporting the field because you're not.
You're supporting the site.
That's right. I mean, even something simple like joining these organizations would support the field.
Yeah. So, and I traveled this as the last note that I wrote off your bio. So you mentioned, so I'll skip to that one first. Speaking at events, and I've seen that you got a little credit there in public speaking for dummies.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I've been a professional speaker for a long, long time, and alongside of some of the other parapsychology courses I used to teach at JFK University, no longer do, but we started a class based on my experience as an author, speaker, and media guy, because I've done hundreds of television shows and thousands of radio and podcasts and newspaper interviews over the years, and it was a course in public speaking, and public speaking, publishing, how to get published, and media skills, and it was for our graduate students in a variety of programs at the university, because when they graduate, they got to be able to, you know, if they don't find an actual job, they have to be able to promote their work, and a lot of people want to write books and get them published, and a lot of people want to get out there and speak and do seminars and such. So I started teaching public speaking back then, and I'd also been, I had a day job for quite some time to support my work in parapsychology, which wasn't bringing much of anything in. And I did a lot of corporate training and speaking. And then I was speaking at colleges as well and a lot of other places. So I got to know the author of Public Speaking for Dummies, Malcolm Kushner, through that day job, actually. And we did a bunch of things together. And eventually he quoted me in the first edition of the book. And when it came to the second edition, he recommended me to be the technical editor. So going through and making sure that the public speaking info in that the second and third edition were correct, which I did. And I still coach people in public speaking to this day. I work with a few authors and a few corporate executives from time to time, and even a couple of parapsychologists who wanted a little help with their public speaking, their presentation skills. Which is, and to be very honest, it's one of the most fun things I do that has immediate return in the sense that I can see a change when I work with people.
Yes,
almost immediately.
I was going to say, that'd be the easiest thing to hear the difference. Or, like, yeah, you hear the difference.
Oh, totally. Yeah, it's really kind of cool when you work with somebody, even for half a day, and you can see them, that they've improved. It's you know, that when I teach a class, other than discussion with them after the fact or having them take a test, I don't know that they've absorbed anything. But in this case, I can see that they have improved, and that makes me feel great to see people actually getting out there and doing better. And for the publishing stuff, I still teach a course in publishing and media skills for JFK, and I've had a few of my students publish books through major publishers and also self-publish. And I'm working with a couple of authors right now, helping them with publicity as well, just kind of getting the word out about their books. And these are not parapsychology people, but they're really good authors. One of them is a 87-year-old mystery writer who has published his second book last year. His first one was only a couple of years ago, and he's finishing up his third book right now. And his name is Richard L. Wren. He's a great guy. His books are fun, kind of adventure books. And we've worked on getting the word out about his books. But he's also written a little booklet on how to get published, how to publish your own novel. And it's for almost no money. It's really a great little thing that he's got. It's available on Amazon.
That's cool. I mean, that's a practical thing. I mean, the
really, really practical. It's 20 pages. It's there's so many books out there that tell you how to get published, and they're all good books, but they have so much information in them, they're hard to slog through. This is like 18 to 20 pages. It tells you exactly what to do.
My kind of book, right there.
Yeah.
Straight forward, just tell you what you need to do. That's
yeah.
Good. Okay, I'm doing it again. 20 minutes, I'm doing good tonight, right on top of things. My guest tonight is Lloyd Auerbach, and we're running out of time, running out of notes, so we're all good. So. This kind of ties to the other topic here. You've done probably, hundreds or thousands of interviews, but again, one thing jumped off at me. Larry King, what was that like?
Well, I wish I had actually been in the studio with Larry. It was an odd show. It was a Halloween show, or one of those types of shows,
right.
And for some reason they decided they had to put everybody they could possibly think of on the show. So I was sitting in San Francisco in a studio. The amazing, or I should say the unamazing, Randy was in Florida. Michael Shermer, another skeptic, was in Los Angeles in the studio with a Catholic priest. Linda Blair was there. I think at some point they may have talked to Jason and Grant, but they talked to a group of people who had experiences, including a couple I had worked with up in Vancouver, Washington, and another group of people in the Southeast. It just was bouncing around quite a bit. It was a very, very odd show. There are clips of it up on YouTube. If you Google Larry King and Lloyd Auerbach, you can find clips of that. He asked some good questions, and there were some really interesting things that happened. I mean, to me, one of the more bizarre things that happened, actually, was at the beginning they had our microphones open. And you could listen in, being in a studio on your own, kind of looking into a camera and seeing a monitor. I'm listening in, and at one point, the couple up in Vancouver, Washington, talked about their house being haunted, and James Randi popped up and said, "Hey, you ought to put your house in for my $1 million challenge." And I jumped in immediately and said, "It's not eligible according to your own rules." So I kind of countered him immediately. And the next thing I knew after the commercial break was that our mics are going to be closed off unless Larry directly addressed us.
Right.
So I'm not sure whether, somebody complained or whether they figured that this could be a bigger discussion or a problem discussion between me and the skeptics or what. I didn't know. But I did feel it was necessary to point out that he was making a comment that was completely inaccurate.
Well, that's par for the course, especially with those people that have the $1 million challenges, it seems. Throwing that around like it's...
Well, the thing is, it's often tossed around by the debunkers as, or the disbelievers as, the ultimate test for science. But if you were to ask any of them who are scientists if someone doing a single experiment, whether they won $1 million or not, for that, if they passed that experiment and did what they said they could do, is that a scientific result? And almost everybody would say, well, no, it's not going to convince me of anything. So ultimately, if somebody won the $1 million challenge, the way it's written, actually, Randy and his people could actually say, we had to give him $1 million because he did exactly what he said he could do under our conditions. He beat our challenge, but he's a fake. We haven't figured out exactly how he faked us, but he's a fake. And they're within their rights, if you actually read the challenge and the rules, totally within their rights to call the person all sorts of names, and the person can't sue. I mean... you still have $1 million, but,
so is it worth the headache at the end of the day, is what we're saying.
Well, there's that, and actually there's a pre-challenge. You have to be tested first by someone they designate, the foundation designates, local to you. And if you don't pass the pre-challenge, you don't even go for the million.
So has anybody even got to that point, I guess, is my...
A couple people have gotten, for publicity's sake, I think they've let people go for the so-called final challenge. But for the most part now, people have not typically gotten past that first step. They've gone to the first step, certainly.
Right, well, I'm sure.
And there have been a lot of people who, you know, when I've read some of the people who have gone through to try the challenge, I mean, frankly, some of these people really are not thinking straight.
Yeah. It's just
the good people. The good people know better than the good people. Probably have a lawyer read the challenge, and the lawyer tells them not to do it. So,
yeah. Anybody probably with common sense goes, that's what makes sense to me.
But, yeah. When people ask me about that, I even ask the skeptics when they start throwing that at me. I said, have you actually read the rules? and they almost all, you know, they'll say no, I haven't. So, well, read the rules and come back to me with that. I'm happy to talk to you after that.
Yeah. So one of the last notes I jotted down before the interview was mentalism.
Mm-hmm.
So you're tell me about that. That just baffles my mind.
Well,
I guess.
I am also a performing psychic entertainer and mentalist.
Okay.
Probably the mentalist people know, they might know the name Kreskin. Or Darren Brown's another famous mentalist these days. Craig Cargis is another guy who's out there. Banachek's another mentalist. We are entertainers who do psychic entertainment, psychic-themed entertainment. And a lot of it relies on psychology and a lot of audience management. There's a lot of things that we're doing that they may look psychic, but they may not be psychic. And I'm not going to say that there's no psychic experience involved or psychic ability involved, because some people actually have a little bit. I'm not going to tell you who, you know, some of them will tell you that they do or they don't. But it's all for entertainment. So I am Professor Paranormal on stage. That's kind of my title and my disclaimer at the same time, because I do a little comedy with that. And what I do looks psychic. And some of it's very psychological, and I state that right up front. Some of it looks very psychic, and some of it looks very downright silly. And I do psychic entertainment professionally. I've actually got a small show this Friday night, in fact, and a couple next month. Mostly do private parties, but I'm doing some more public shows, public events these days. And I'm part of an organization called the Psychic Entertainers Association, where we talk about that. I used to be a magician. I used to do comedy magic, actually, in the 80s. And that's all of this is an outgrowth of a need to learn the methods of psychic fraud. Back when I took my graduate studies in parapsychology back in the early 80s, very early 80s, we actually had a class taught by a local magician about psychic fraud, so we'd be better researchers. And I found I liked performing and, frankly, was heavily encouraged by a couple of main people in parapsychology to, because I like performing, to really get in there and do it. Because knowing things is very different than performing things.
Yeah, I was gonna say that must be fun, I guess, just to play around with the different things. I mean,
it is, and it's there's the applause. But to be very honest, I love doing something on stage and having the audience's mouths drop and there being total silence in the audience for a moment. That's a very cool thing.
Okay, before I forget, because we've got 10-ish minutes left. For we talked about hauntedbychocolate.com earlier and Forever Family. Foundation.org. What else do we need to know?
Okay, so the Ryan Center. Actually, if you go to my website, go to mindreader.com, easy one to remember, that's my website. Along the right-hand side, you'll see a list of various organizations we recommend. And the Forever Family Foundation is one of them. The Ryan Center is one. You'll see a link to the Parapsychological Association, which is the body of scientists of parapsychology, and a number of other organizations that have great information or services as well. And on the site, if you explore it, you'll see articles that I wrote years ago for Fate Magazine that are free to download. There's a bunch of other freebie articles there as well, some links to courses. I mentioned we have a merchandise page there, which does have these new courses that I put up, a couple of the distance courses, as well as my cheapo teleseminar lectures on various topics as well in MP3. And there's a lot of other information there, a lot of resource material there that people can find. And if you're a ghost hunting group, there's even a couple things you can download, which are kind of tools you can use, surveys and things like that you can use in the investigations that you do. So that's a really good place to start. The Rhine Center is R-H-I-N-E, rhinecenter.org, or just rhine.org. And I think those would be kind of the primary ones to go to, although you might also go to parapsychology.org, because that's the Parapsychology Foundation, tons of educational materials, and again, links to other resources for you.
There you go, and you can always get the old books and all that fun stuff as well, so let's not forget about that.
Right, right, and if people want to know about my courses, there's a link on my website to the Parapsychological Studies Program for HCH, a description of that, and it's easy to get knocked over to HCH for that. Or just Google HCH Institute and Parapsychology, and that'll take you right to our program as well. I think that's my group, if you want to call it, the Office of Paranormal Investigations, is I have a network of investigators now that I'm building up over around the country of previous students. People who have gone through my courses are becoming part of the network and trying to build a good referral network for investigators or people who know stuff, as opposed to people who clearly only follow the TV methods that they've been seeing.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. And I see, I was just scrolling down your page here, and you've launched your YouTube channel, which must be fun and exciting to try to gather all that information up in one place.
Yeah, a lot of my TV appearances are on the YouTube channel. And actually I have two YouTube channels. There's that one. I haven't linked out the new one yet, but there's another one, which is my Prof Paranormal YouTube channel, where I'll be putting lectures up, some of my old lectures that I've got. I put one up on Mind Over Matter from 1996, so I'll be putting a few freebie video lectures up there as well over the next month.
That's cool. It's cool they're still around, and it's cool that you're able to get them up there and share them for everyone. So I love the Internet. It just baffles my mind at times that, you know, that we're able to talk thousands of miles apart and have people listen to us around the world. So it's just,
right, right, yeah.
I don't know. It just baffles my mind at times. And probably not a good thing to do that at this point. But I'm gonna swing it back to probably one of the first questions we talked about: mentoring programs for ghost hunters and mediums. So what would be the? We've got a few minutes left. What would be the first thing you'd just blanket tell somebody if they contacted you?
I probably would give them some actual text materials and resources, and point them to some resources to read up. One of the things I strongly suggest people do as ghost hunters is learn a little bit of the history of the field. I'm always shocked to hear people say that they didn't know that there was anything before, let's say, the TV shows, and even in the late 90s, as if the field suddenly popped up out of nowhere in the 1990s or early 2000s because of these TV shows. And, you know, we actually officially go back to 1882 and the founding of the Society for Psychical Research. And what people are often unaware of is that many of the early books, certainly before 1923, there's tons of material for free through Google Books and archive.org, the Internet Archive. And I usually point people to a lot of the early texts that they can get for free, including some of the early stuff from the Society for Psychical Research. There's a book called Historic Ghosts and Ghost Hunters, which is kind of fun to read, which is an old one. The actual oldest book of, the first book of true ghost stories was published in 1848, called The Night Side of Nature by Catherine Crowe, and it's the first collection of people's true experiences with ghosts, and it's a great read, and it's available for free. So I like to point people to free resources on the net. I often also point them to a lecture by Dean Radin, R-A-D-I-N. He did it at Google a few years ago, did it actually at Google headquarters, on the taboo of psi in science. And it really is a great lecture talking about why parapsychology seemed to have a problem with other scientists and academics in general. And it's kind of a really good starting point for folks. And again, it's another free lecture that's up there. So I do like to, besides conversing with people about their specific needs, also point them to some resources that are out there. And I can make one recommendation just right off the bat. If people want to read any book about the history of the field or the getting started in the field and where it started, there's a book called The Ghost Hunters by Deborah Blum, B-L-U-M. And that book came out a few years ago, and I've been shocked to find out that people didn't know it existed. It's literally about the early ghost hunters and the early folks out there, and it's a great read. It's like a novel.
That's good. It's good to know. Good stuff. And what's your favorite? I don't want to say favorite piece of equipment because I don't want to get into the digital thing. But what are some
psychics.
Things you?
Well, psychics and mediums are my favorite pieces of equipment. Human beings are my favorite pieces of equipment. Whether it be the witnesses or the people that I'm working with who are psychics / sense / mediums, we can. Human beings are designed to have these experiences and to look at these experiences, and we can ask questions of mediums and psychics. We can't ask questions of equipment and have the equipment answer us. It's still controversial as to whether when things respond, like those K2 meters and flashlights and stuff, whether it's the ghost doing it or something else. But at least we are able to work with that. Otherwise, I do use electromagnetic field detectors of a couple types, field meters, and those are useful, but they are, they're misused so often. We started using those in the 80s, and I've been told I'm the first person to actually use one on television, use one of the tri-field meters on TV. They're used to look for correlations or connections, not cause and effect, but correlations between people's experiences and unusual magnetic fields, provided we have already eliminated all the other possible sources of those unusual magnetic fields. So the idea is that if we have an unusual field, an area that a corner of a house, and suddenly there's this high magnetic background field there, especially after we turn all the power off, and that happens to be also where people are experiencing something, there's a correlation between the high magnetic field and the experience. It's not cause and effect as far as we know, but there's an indicator there that something unusual is actually happening. And they cannot be used to detect ghosts. There's so many things that they can't be used for, and it's unfortunate that people misuse them so often. They can be used in a non-scientific way. I mean, you can actually have a little indicator whether it's lights or a little needle bouncing back and forth. I mean, you could use it as a communication device and ask yes or no questions and that kind of thing, but that's very non-scientific because that's not the purpose of it, of the device.
Yeah, it's just sometimes you think people, again, the back to the know-it-all people probably know what he's listening to this point in the podcast, so I can call them stupid. No, it's just, and then my personal favorite, they take one picture and expect you to take it just right there. Like, you were there, and they didn't mess with it or anything. And it's the best thing since, I'll say it, sliced bread. It's just remarkable to me that some people will be that silly. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I get people sending me pictures all the time. They want me to authenticate the ghost picture. It's like, if they can't authenticate a UFO picture, how in the world could I authenticate a ghost picture?
Why haven't we caught Bigfoot yet? I mean, I know we've got about a minute left. That's kind of a...
Well, there's some possibility. If it's an ape, there are possibilities of why we haven't caught him yet, But, that's a whole different story and literally a whole different animal.
Yeah. A horrible thing to be bringing up with a minute left. But still, nevertheless, like I was telling you right before we got in there, some people want me to do 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Until next time. We'll bring up Bigfoot again next time when you come back on. So... it's been fun, Lloyd. And mindreader.com, right?
Yeah. That's the starting point, yep.
That's where you go to find Lloyd and all his fun stuff. And with that being said, Lloyd, I want to wish you a good evening and good keep busy this summer, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Jim.
Have a good night, bud.
Bye.
And that was Lloyd Auerbach, and he was my guest tonight. And, time for me to go. Have a good night, everybody.
Well, before we flip that on-air sign to the off position, a quick reminder. For all things about the report, previews, and reviews, go to italkparanormal.com. That's italkparanormal.com. Good night.
This is Thomas Fusco, author of the book Behind the Cosmic Veil, A New Vision of Reality, and you are listening to The Mallard Report.
Hey, everybody, it's The Mallard Report.
It's the moon.